Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
We are talking golf here, so I want to welcome you to the grill room, the most comprehensive look into the world of global golf. I'm Bob Bupker, alongside Alex Maselli. And Alex, suddenly I feel like we're in the meat of the season. We've had two World Golf Championship events back-to-back, and now Masters right around the corner.
Boy, back-to-back must mean something to you differently than the rest of the world, Bobby. Back-to-back.
Almost.
Oh, I didn't hear the almost part. I'm so used to you just not knowing what you're saying, so I was used to that. Okay, so yes, we've had two World Golf Championships in 3 weeks, and what we've learned from them is basically Australia is better than everybody else.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, it's pretty dominant what's happening. I mean, Adam Scott wins two of the last five events. Jason Day wins two of the last five events. All of a sudden, Australia is this phenomenal powerhouse.
Well, I'm not going to go into all the numbers, but if you pull any golf savvy Australian off the street, they will give you chapter and verse of worldwide dominance by the Australians. And then you hear about Jason Day, basically 9 out of the last 13 wins. And if you actually extrapolated back a little, I was working on a story last night. You know, before he started this streak, basically, which was at the PGA Championship, he was in the lead, tied for the lead at the U.S. Open. This is the U.S. Open where he had vertigo, and we weren't sure what was going to happen. Didn't have a great final round. Finished ninth. Then at the Open Championship, tied for the lead after 54 holes. Doesn't win, ties for fourth, one shot out of a playoff. Now, that was the beginning, I think, of the Jason Day dominance, even though he had a T12 at Bridgestone. Then all of a sudden, you know, Katie barred the door. Jason Day is just lit it up. And I was looking back at some quotes from Jordan Spieth, who he played with in the final day at Whistling Straits of the PGA Championship. And he just talked about how he was just striping it. I think almost everybody that played against Jason Day, with one exception last week, probably thought that they were feeling the striping going on as well.
Yeah, and going back to that Open Championship, Alex, at St. Andrews, it was Jason Day on the last hole from about 15 feet away with an opportunity to get into that playoff. And when he left that putt short, he was shattered on the green. That's how tough he was last year as he went into this streak of victories.
Yeah, there's no question that he is playing some of the best golf out there. And when you talk to the players that are competing against them, they have no qualms about the fact that Jason Day now is clearly the world number one, as he was just named this week after his performances over the last 2 weeks. He pushed Jordan Spieth aside like a rag doll and now has claimed number one status. And it's not often, personally, that I think the best player playing right now ends up being the number one guy. This is a pure example of that happening.
It is. And speaking of pure example, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the Dell match play just conducted this past week at the Austin Country Club in Texas, I want your sentiments on how you feel about the format. I think I'm a dying breed because I love the one and done where you play one match, you lose, you go home. This pod system or round robin or whatever you want to call it for the first 3 days just seemed confusing to me. Your viewpoint?
Well, I don't think it's confusing. I can see where this could be confusing for you, however.
But well, that's,
for
the normal that's people, true.
Yeah, for normal people, it's not confusing. But I think what you like is the idea of what pure match play is, which is one and done. But we're in 2016 now, and television pretty much controls everything that happens in golf. And this is clearly not only a television decision, but also a sponsor decision. If you're Dell and you're writing the check for, I'm going to be conservative, but somewhere between $12 and $14 million a year, including activation, you would like to make sure that at least you have some decent players to show up in your finals, in your semifinals, in your quarterfinals. And also, by the way, you'd like to be able to show as much golf as you possibly can. You know, if we go the one-and-done route after Wednesday and Thursday, we're considerably less golf. And I think that's always been one of the problems with the World Golf Championships. They've gotten so such that they have to be so inherently fair. They put guys off of both tees on a short field. And then by the time you get out there, you barely got time for a couple beers, and you're looking for the exit. So I think this is I don't agree with it. I don't want it this way, but you know, you have to understand what the way the world is today.
Well, I have to take exception to what you said about decent players surviving. I mean, these are the 64 best players in the world. So I don't care if you're number 64, you're a quality player. And all we have to do is look at Bello from Spain, who out of nowhere seeded 53rd, and he made it into Sunday. So you better retract that statement about, you know, we want decent players to play on the weekend.
It's Bayo, not Bello, because obviously we got TalkSport 2. I don't want the people in the UK thinking that you don't know how to pronounce his name. And secondly, what I mean by that is the fact that there's a marketability problem. Once you get past the first 5 or 10 guys in the world rankings, and some that aren't that high up, like a Phil Mickelson, like a Tiger Woods, when Tiger comes back, once you get past that number, it's very hard to say that those are players that people care to see. And there's a difference between what people want to see and how good people are. You know, obviously, as you said, Bayo, he's 36 in the world now, moving up. He's a very, very good player, the second-ranked player in Spain. He's going to be in the Olympics. But that being said, I don't think anybody was clamoring to run to Austin Country Club or turn on their television to see Rafael Cabrera or Bayo, and that's the point.
Well, it's a point not well taken, but we'll move on there. What about the Austin Country Club? How do you feel it held up? I thought it was terrific under this format, especially. They flip-flopped the nines to make it more compelling with the risk-reward shots that were out there on the golf course. Austin Country Club, a winner for match play?
Well, I think it was actually a bigger winner for match play than it would be for stroke play. I think it's set up perfectly. It did exactly what they were looking for. You know, Austin is it's a thriving, building, growing community. But it doesn't mean there's all these great golf courses you're going to go to. And so, you know, from what everybody says, the cream of the crop is Austin Country Club. So you want to find a way to use the cream of the crop. And I think they've done that. And I think with some tweaks, and not on the golf course per se, but more set up and maybe where they put stands, grandstands, and things like that, It's going to be terrific for as long as we go there. And I think the Dell people were very happy. And I think the players, which, you know, they're very hard to satisfy, the players. The players, once they got a feel for it, I think they really liked the golf course, and I think they really enjoyed it.
I do, too, and people are certainly enjoying Austin. It is now the 16th largest city in America. All right, let's talk about the action. In the final match, Jason Day defeats Louis Oosthuizen in final 5-4 in that match. Never seemed to me like Day was in any trouble or any doubt. He just seemed to overmatch Louis.
Well, I'm not going to agree with that early on. I mean, when Louis drove the first green and Jason Day hit his drive in the bunker, I thought that that was pretty compelling, and I thought that was somewhat telling that Louis Oosthuizen was throwing the gauntlet down early. But then when Louis hit the ball in the bunker on two and then hit his ball in the hazard and basically gave that well-earned hole back to Day, you could just kind of slowly see how it was going to start going. And Day wins another hole, and then Day makes some really good saves. And we talked about it yesterday with him, and 6, 7, and 8 were pivotal. He thought that he could have given those away, and if he would have bogeyed those holes instead of making good up and downs, he would have been down instead of up. And then it was just slowly but surely Jason Day continuing to just manhandle not only the golf course at times, but the opponent he was playing against. And it was an easy 5-4 win at the end. I think part of it is, to be honest with you, Louis Oosthuizen, he's never been great at playing that much golf at one time. He played 72 holes basically in 2 days with a back that's just as bad as Jason Day's to some extent. So I think that has part to do with it. But at the end of the day, Jason Day did exactly what he needed to do. He knew when to stay and when not to stay. When he had his different people in his camp trying to convince him not to continue after what happened on Wednesday, he did continue because he knew he felt he was playing well enough to win this championship, and he did. And you know, you have to give it. I never thought of Jason Day of being a guy that kind of man up like that all the time, but listening to him on Sunday after his win, he clearly is that kind of person. And I would say that in some way, shape, or form, you started to hear, not see, but hear a little Tiger Woods when he talked about those things.
And when you're mentioning Jason Day on Wednesday, playing in his match against Graham McDowell, really tweaked his back on the 15th hole, and it was debatable whether Jason Day was going to go forward. Didn't even realize whether he could go forward or not until the following day after extensive treatment in the physio trailer. He comes out on Thursday, goes to the range. It feels kind of good. He makes the decision to go ahead, and then certainly he goes on the victory. One other thing about Louis Oosthuizen, Alex, kind of amazing. He won the Open Championship 2010, St. Andrews, and he's never won professionally in America. I just find those two statements so hard to comprehend.
Well, I mean, he's a worldwide player. Obviously, television didn't realize he'd won in Perth a couple of weeks ago, which he talked about extensively how important that was for him to do. You know, Louis is I don't want to say a great player, because I think a great player would have won more and probably won more majors. But Louis is a guy that has the talent to be a great player. But I don't think that he wants to necessarily do what's necessary to be a great player. He loves being what he is right now. He loves his family, loves his kids, loves playing golf the way he does. But, you know, there's still a lot in Louis Oosthuizen. I mean, if things would have gone well last year, I mean, well, and you need them to go well, you need to have a little luck, he would have had two more majors last year. I mean, clearly being saddled with Tiger Woods in the first two rounds of the U.S. Open didn't help him, and then he loses out by a shot. And then at the Open Championship, he's tied for the lead after 54 holes, goes into a playoff that clearly, if you looked at the three competitors, I would have thought Louis Oosthuizen would have won. But as we were talking the other day with some people, you know, you looked at that playoff at St. Andrews, and it set up perfectly for Zach Johnson. First hole not that long, second hole not that long, 18 not that long. The only 17 was a hole that was really a difficult hole, but it was difficult for everyone. It didn't matter if you were Zach Johnson or not. So it set up perfectly for Zach Johnson, and Zach Johnson won.
Meanwhile, defending champion Rory McIlroy was ousted in the semis by Jason Day, but he didn't seem too upset. He just came up a little bit short.
My game feels in really good shape. Look, it was a really good match out there. The quality of the match was really good. There was no bogeys, a few birdies out there, especially in tricky conditions. So, you were 2 down and 5 to play, and you know, I played the last 5 holes pretty well. But you know, Jason just didn't give me anything. He played very solid, and just came up a little short.
A little shoulda, woulda, coulda in that concession speech by Rory McIlroy. Meanwhile, Louis Oosthuizen thinks Jason definitely now a step ahead of everyone else.
I knew he was going to be tough. I needed to play really well, and I didn't. I didn't play bad, but I just didn't make any putts for birdies, which never helps. I mean, he's a great player. He had some amazing iron shots. Amazing up and downs, and he's definitely at the moment a few steps ahead of everyone.
Well, Louis Oosthuizen saying Jason Day a step ahead of everyone. I kind of have to agree with him after the performances the last 2 weeks, winning down at Arnold Palmer's place in Orlando and then backing it up with his second match play championship. After the round, Jason Day spoke.
Very, very pleased to be the champion again. It was a interesting week, to say the least. I mean, it's not even thinking about playing Thursday after Wednesday with the tweak back on 15T, and then getting to number one on Saturday and then winning on Sunday. It was a very, very strange week, but glad to be in it and glad to get it through and get the win. You know, the chipping and putting was definitely a plus. I mean, I've never felt so comfortable on the greens, and these greens were rolling true.
You know, Alex, it's obvious when you win, things go your way. There was a key factor earlier in the week after that injured back on Wednesday involving Paul Casey.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I agree with that. I think that, you know, Jason only had to play six holes against Paul Casey on Friday in the third round of the round robin, and he got in easily then. He won all three matches. But Paul Casey had him one down going into five and hit the green in two on the par 5-6 where Jason was short. Now, they both ended up making a five before Paul Casey withdrew. But Paul Casey said to me afterwards, he said, look, I had him one down and I was going two down there. You know, all I have to say is, you know, Paul Casey has done very well in this championship as well in match play. And that would not have been the guy that I would want to have seen in my group if I didn't have to. I'm not saying that Jason Day wouldn't have beaten him, but certainly he would have had to go on a lot further along than six holes, and you just never know in those situations.
Absolutely. Over 18 holes, obviously, anybody can beat anybody, but Paul Casey, traditionally, a very difficult out.
You know, Bob, Jason said his short game was going gangbusters at Austin Country Club, and I'm sure a lot has to do with the fact that the conditions of the course. He said the greens were rolling very true, and they can only be due to the fantastic efforts of the superintendents and crew. In fact,
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. 2016 Dell Match Play champion Jason Day agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere. You know, Alex, during the NBC telecast, Peter Jacobson had some very interesting things to say about Jason Day, including what impressed Peter Jacobson about Jason Day is that he's a no-excuse kind of guy. He's been through a lot in his life, emotionally and now physically. Peter Jacobson said, this guy's just tough. It's impressive. I agree with Peter.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly true. And I think if you've seen what he's done over a period of time and, you know, everything that he's doing now, I mean, now he's got two kids and a wife and, you know, all the pulls and tears at him from not only the media in the U.S., but obviously Australian media. You know, he's got a lot going on, and when you're at this level, it's hard to adjust sometimes. And some players do a good job adjusting, and some do not. And I think Jason Day is doing a very good job at adjusting.
And the next time we have a match play situation, pretty sure Louis Oosthuizen will not want to see Jason Day in his bracket. This is the second time they met. Day defeated Oosthuizen, in the quarterfinals, 2-1 in 2014. They went on to win the title that year. Kind of amazing. Final four players, Alex, no U.S. players involved.
Well, you know, we had 11 in the top 16 and then none in the semifinals. You know, let's be honest. This is a worldwide game. And, you know, most of the best players in the world play on the PGA Tour. So week in and week out, they're getting the experience of playing the best players, so it doesn't surprise you of that's the case. And we had the same case, I think, in 2010 when Poulter won as well. But does it bode well for U.S. golf? I think it's a outlier, to be quite honest with you. I don't think it matters one way or the other.
Yeah, I think this is just a small segment, obviously, of the PGA Tour schedule. Surprise winner down in Puerto Rico, Tony Finau, a rookie on tour. But boy, does he come with credentials.
Well, you know, what's interesting there is he's a long hitter, Bob, but he changed equipment this year. And there's nothing wrong with changing equipment, but usually it takes some time in changing equipment. I can rattle off guys. It'd be Zach Johnson. If it'd be Gary Woodland, two guys that have changed equipment this year, and they have not gotten exactly what they want of it. It takes time to fine-tune everything. So when you get Tony Finau winning, even though it's in Puerto Rico, the field is certainly not the same as a normal tour event because a lot of the guys are playing, obviously, in the Dell match play, but that doesn't matter. The fact that he could go ahead and execute the way he wanted to and get it done, and then winning in the three-hole playoff, as you know, Bob, playoffs are tough. I mean, that's just, you know, everything changes. Your whole mind changes. Everything in your head changes. You're just playing this guy now. You've been playing 72 holes against the golf course. Now you're playing this guy. And in this case, that guy was Steve Marino, who's got certainly his own credentials. So for Tony Finau to win down there was very, very impressive.
And somebody else that put in a real good effort, Ian Poulter. He happened to be the first alternate for the Dell match play, but he didn't get into that. Goes down to Puerto Rico, and he missed out with a closing even par round by one shot of getting into that playoff.
Yeah, but you know what? It just shows that Poulter, in his case, I'm sure it just shows that he's got the game that he's been he feels like he's been lacking. Just been struggling a lot at different times. So even though he didn't win, he was leading after 54 holes, and I think that's got to be a positive he's going to take out of Puerto Rico.
And I'm sure Darren Clarke, the Ryder Cup captain, made a little note in his notebook. Ian Poulter may be rounding in the form.
Well, I don't know, but certainly Steve Marino's rounding in the form, another guy who we haven't heard much about, and then all of a sudden he shows up and loses in a playoff. Look, when you get in those situations, you certainly want to win, but I think you can take a lot of positives out when it doesn't happen. All right, Bobby, before we take a break, we just want to remind our listeners that the Grill Room, is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in the military, both at home and around the world, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and, of course, our new partner, TalkSport 2, which is around the world.
You're listening to The Grill Room on TalkSport 2. On a very sad note, Gary Planos, affectionately known as Mr. Kapalur, has passed away. I had another name for Gary. It was Gary, what do you need, Planos? He was so accommodating to everybody that went to Maui for that event. Gary was found, unfortunately, this past Saturday in his home where he had lived for the past 25 years. Found there deceased. No cause of death has been given. But Alex, you knew him very well. Janice Self, our executive producer, knew him very well. And yours truly knew him very well. He is going to be missed.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Thank you for spending some time with us in The Grill Room. Once again, I'm Bob Bubka. He's Alex Maselli. Let's turn and talk a little Masters. Automatically, it's on the radar screen, Alex, coming up in just 2 weeks. And before we talk about what's going to happen this year, hard to imagine, it was 30 years ago, 1986, maybe the greatest Masters of all time. Certainly many people will make that argument. The time Jack Nicklaus at 46 won his sixth green jacket. What a Masters that was.
Well, you know, when you talk about events and where you were, everybody knows where they were for the 86 Masters. And actually, when Jack had all the potential Ryder Cuppers over to dinner a couple months ago, well, I guess in the last month, actually, at Honda, that was one of the questions. For those that were alive, actually, which is probably only half the room of that, they were asked about where they were and where they saw the 86 Masters. So, I mean, that's how big the event is. And there's really, I mean, I can't think of an event in a Sunday at any tournament that I've ever covered that was as big as that.
Well, let me ask you this. Where were you for the 86 Masters?
I was just like anybody else. I mean, I wasn't covering golf back then, so I was sitting on the edge of my seat and just I don't know. You know, when you're sitting there watching it, every time you did something positive or negative, you know, you have reactions. You know, you get a little nervous. You're walking around the room. You're going to get something to drink. You're going to commercial. You're thinking, oh, wow, what if he does this? What if he does? I mean, all these things running through your head. I mean, you're just a fan, for goodness sakes. But it was that kind of thing. It was, there was nothing more than you wanting to see Jack Nicklaus do what Jack Nicklaus had done for so many years, but because of time had limited his ability to do it. And that's what it was all about. I mean, there was certainly a lot of great players that had a chance to win that day, including Seve Ballesteros and Greg Norman and Tom Kite, but you didn't want to see any of them win. You wanted to see Nicklaus win, and that was what it was all about. And Bobby, obviously, I'd be remiss in not asking you where you were. I'm assuming I know that answer, but I'm going to ask anyways.
Well, I was chomping at the bit for that question, though, Alex. I was right behind the 18th green, and I've been there many, many times since. I've been to many, many majors since. Nothing. Trust me when I say that, nothing comes close to that. I think it was best said by, Nick Price and Greg Norman. Norman was very much in contention. When he got to the par 3 13th hole, Nicklaus was well on his way to making his huge move up that leaderboard. There were only about 300 people in the gallery on a Sunday afternoon with the two leaders going out and playing. Nick had shot 63 the day before, but I still get goosebumps. And I think one of the great sayings, Ken Venturi actually turned to Jim Nance after that Masters. He said, "Jimmy, how old are you?" And Jimmy said, "I'm 26 years old." And Ken Venturi said, "Well, you may live to be 76 or 86, but I'll tell you this much, young man, you're never ever going to see a better Masters than you just witnessed with the Golden Bear." And we'll talk a lot more about that 86 Masters next week as we prepare our Masters show. Matter of fact, we're going to have a great contest where you're going to be able to win a pair of transition sunglasses. We'll tell you more about that and the contest rules later on in the show. Let me ask you, Alex, is Jason Day the clear favorite now at the Masters?
By estimation, no. Actually, I still stay with who I think my favorite is, who is Bubba Watson. I don't think there's anybody that can play that golf course now, day to day, week to week, as well as Bubba Watson can play it, if Bubba Watson is on his game. So if I take everybody on their game, I still go with Bubba Watson.
All right, let's listen to what Jason Day had to say about his Masters prep.
It's one tournament that I've always wanted to win. It's one tournament that I've always wanted to slide the jacket on and be able to, go back there every year. So I can't get comfortable with how I'm playing right now. I can't get lazy because I got to, understand that what I'm doing is working. So I got to keep working on the things that, have caused me to win over the last 2 weeks and keep doing that and then stay focused and hopefully put on the green jacket. But it is going to be a tough one.
Well, Jason Day admitting, Alex, it is going to be a tough one. And just the fact that he's won the last 2 weeks, the bell rings that Thursday at the end of Magnolia Lane. Doesn't matter what you've done prior to that. And it's certainly going to be interesting. Let's talk about some of the other guys that should be big factors when we get down there. Rory McIlroy, maybe he's been thinking about that green jacket because he needs the Masters to complete his Grand Slam. But he certainly, or I should say we certainly, have not seen the best of Rory McIlroy thus far this year.
Well, I think that's true. Struggled at times and hasn't brought his best game, changing his putting stroke. That all being said, I think he's going to be ready for the Masters. The question is if he's going to be good enough to win the Masters this year. And I find it maybe difficult to believe that he will be. I just don't think that he's exactly where he needs to be mentally and with his swing, where he's going to be comfortable enough. But that being said, you know, anybody we're going to talk about here in this short list can come up and win the first major of the season. So, but that being said, I just don't feel the same comfort level with Rory that maybe I had in the past. I don't know. What do you think, Bobby?
Well, I'm a little concerned, Alex. The switch down at Miami, at Doral, at the Cadillac World Championship, Rory McIlroy makes the big announcement that he's going left-hand low. I don't know. I just haven't seen enough putts from that 5, 6, 7 foot range go in over the last couple of weeks. And boy, oh boy, if you ever need to make 5 and 6 foot putts, it's at Augusta, because if you make a lag putt there, Alex, a good lag putt, you still have about 6 feet left to finish the hole. And those are the ones that you absolutely have to just pour in if you hope to have a chance to win.
Well, I think that's true. And he just doesn't seem like he's making the putts like he'd like to make, even though he's making some good swings. So we'll see what happens. And as you know, the greens at Augusta National are completely different than any place else that they'll play. Jordan Spieth found that out, but Jordan was ready. I think Jordan was one of those guys that was kind of built for Augusta National. Almost every time he's played there, he's played well, including obviously winning last year. So I like Jordan to an extent that I think that he'll play well. I don't think that he's got the same game that he wishes he had when he was in Hawaii. I think if this was January and his game in January and he's brought it to Augusta National next week, I would like Jordan a lot better than I do right now.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see how Jordan, he's certainly not putting at all like he did last year. I mean, 20-foot putts, 25-foot putts, they were going in like it was a manhole cover, and that's awfully difficult to keep up. Somebody that already has a green jacket in the locker, he won back-to-back events, winning at Honda, winning at Doral. Adam Scott, can't count him out.
No, and especially since now he seems to be putting better. He'll have Steve Williams back on the bag for this week. That being said, I think we're just going to have to see with Adam. Obviously, as I said, he's putting better, but these greens are completely different. And, you know, you're going to have to get comfortable with that with the shorter putter, which is something he hasn't used on these greens in a while. But Adam Scott, you know, if you take Jason Day out of the mix over the last couple of months, Adam Scott is certainly the best player that's played out here. So I don't think you can discount Adam Scott at all. I do think, though, you can clearly discount Ricky Fowler, Bobby.
Why is that?
I just don't think that, again. I mean, he's just not really shown a lot. I think, you know, match play is a pretty good example. He played atrociously, I thought. Didn't get into the round of 16. And this is a guy that when you set up the brackets and you look at everything, you got to say, hey, Ricky Fowler's going to be one of those guys. And he wasn't.
Yeah, but I think possibly he's anxious for that first major, as rightfully he should be, and I'm sure he would love to have a green jacket in his locker. I think you're being a bit premature evaluating Ricky Fowler. I think he might be there at the end. What about Zach Johnson? I mean, he wins last year the Open Championship at St. Andrews, former winner at Augusta. Can he do it again?
Well, I think the difference between Augusta when he won, Bob, and Augusta now, Augusta when he won was a wet situation. It pretty much worked out perfectly for him because of the greens, soft conditions. It seemed like everything worked out well for him. I think a hard and fast Augusta National might be a little more difficult for Zach Johnson, but I think it would fall right into the wheelhouse of a Phil Mickelson, who is one guy that we don't have on a list here. But I think Phil Mickelson, showing that he has game, and in talking to his caddy, Bones McKay, says that his man is really starting to play really well. And I think if there's anybody that would know, it would be Bones. So I think you got to put Nick Mickelson on that short list because of his not only because of his game, but his how he just turns it on when he goes to Augusta National.
Yeah, he just loves that drive down Magnolia Lane. Latest check in Las Vegas, the odds makers say Spieth, McIlroy, Day are all at 7-1. Bubba Watson currently at 10-1. Ricky Fowler at 15-1. And, of course, prior to the Masters, the drive, chip, and putt It's in its second year, hosted by Augusta National. It's for kids around the country aged between 7 and 15. They've qualified in their age groups through local and regional events to come to Augusta with their parents to compete in the finals. Should be very interesting for all of those youngsters. And the Grill Room would like to take this opportunity to wish each and every one of those contestants the very best of luck. Have fun, kids. If you're listening to this show, it'll be the time of your life.
Well, you know, Bobby, I have to say one thing about that. Augusta National is the reason why that thing is successful. If you're having the finals at almost any place else in the world, it's not going to have the same cachet as being able to have the finals at Augusta National. And if there's a kid that wants to get involved in golf and play at Augusta National, this is the easiest way for them to get that opportunity. So they're all clamoring to try to get into these finals. And I think that's the difference with Augusta National.
Well, Alex, you know, the Grill Room believes that growing the game has to start with the kids in junior golf. They have to start somewhere. In order for the kids to learn the game, have fun doing it, and be successful, they have to have the right equipment. Yes, even the little ones. And now there's no reason for any child to play with cut-down clubs ever again. Golfin, that's G-O-L-P-H-I-N, has the answer. Beginners to winners, not only learning the sport of golf, but also in life. Just visit golfin.com to see how they can help your junior golfer learn to love the sport of a lifetime. We'll be back with the rest of the story after this break.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by golfweek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and Talk Sport 2
around the world.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Make Coolbrella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Coolbrella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Coolbrella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to Coolbrella.com. That's K-O-O-L-B-R-E-L-L-A.com. Coolbrella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Once again, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be part of our Grill Room family. He's Alex, I'm Bob. Time now to talk about the LPGA. Alex, Lydia Ko wins the Kia Classic, played at Aviara in Carlsbad, California, by 4 shots over NB Park. What do you say about Lydia Ko that hasn't already been said?
Well, I think you can't say Hall of Famer yet, only because she hasn't played enough events practically. You know, it is amazing how good she is and how she doesn't seem to back down at all. You know, 11 victories since turning professional October 2013, that's not too bad. And there doesn't seem to be anything holding her back. It's not like she's got one part of her game that needs to be better than it is to win, because she's winning at a pretty good clip right now. And she's playing some really good players, both American players and international players. So I think that Lydia Ko can pretty much write her ticket on that tour. The question is, Bob, for me, is will she ever become as popular as some of the other players out there in the past? Like, let's take an Annika Sorenstam as an example. You know, will she, or Lorena Ochoa, or a Beth Daniel, or you know, those kind of players, will she ever be as popular as those were, or certainly a Nancy Lopez? Because that's what that tour really needs.
No, you're right about that, Alex. Just the style of Lydia Ko doesn't lead to that. She's not flamboyant. She's not a fancy dresser. She's not a loud talker. She's just like the quiet assassin. Just goes out on the golf course, goes about her business, has a routine down pat, doesn't vary from the routine. And you make a good point, Alex. As much as I hate to agree with you, she doesn't generate excitement except with the quality of her play.
Right, and this tour needs more, even though, you know, I'm not criticizing her, because you've got to play the way you got to play. You got to do what you got to do to win. But this tour needs more. When Lexi Thompson wins, or forget Lexi Thompson, there are some other players out there that have just a lot of excitement, and they're good. They're good for the tour. They get a lot of people interested. Lydia Ko, maybe she'll grow into that. I mean, I'm maybe being a bit premature, but maybe she'll grow into being a little more vivacious and kind of get more interest level from the media as well as the fans.
Yeah, it certainly would be a good thing for the LPGA Tour. Well, this week, as you well know, Mr. Maselli, it's the first major of the season for the LPGA. It's called the ANA Inspiration. Lydia Ko certainly has to be the favorite going in. It's going to be contested at Rancho Mirage. Used to be called the Nabisco. This is the one. People don't know much about the tournament, but they probably know that the winner traditionally jumps into the pond next to the 18th green. That has become quite a ceremony at this event.
Well, one thing that it proves to me is I'm glad there's not a pond at the 18th at Augusta National. I would hate to have to see some of those guys jumping in the pond. But that being said, it's an interesting thing. Look, everything's got its own little quirkiness about it, and this is certainly it with this event. And they have robes ready for them and towels and everything else. So, you know, last year Brittany Lincecum jumped in, and her and practically everybody in her family, friends, and everything else. So, it's an interesting thing. But, I mean, after a while, you know it's going to happen, and, you know, we don't want to make it a big deal. It's kind of like Gatorade over a coach's head at a football game. Okay, so we know it's going to happen. Let's move on.
Yeah, once it becomes too scripted, it loses the impact. But you did mention the name Brittany Lincecum jumping in the pond last year. She jumped in because she won the title. She'll be our defending champion next week.
You know, just to talk about the non-scripted version, Bob, wasn't it Jerry Pate that jumped into the 18th pond at the Players' Championship, clearly unscripted, and bringing Dean Beeman in with him?
Yeah, absolutely. But we haven't seen any winners since then. So apparently that wasn't a good idea. Maybe has something to do with those alligators down there.
Yeah, I bet that's true. Hey, Bob, with any major competitive championship, the golf course superintendent and his staff play a vital role in not only getting the course in pristine shape, but also keeping it that way for the whole week.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The 2014 U.S. Women's Open champion, Michelle Wee, agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere. And our thanks to Michelle Wee for coming on and echoing our sentiments about the golf course superintendents. We did get a message, Alex, from Tim Fincham. He has a contract extension, apparently good to June of 2017, but I think you have information that indicates maybe he will not even stay on the job that long.
Yes, Bob. Bizarrely, Tim Fincham admitted to some of us in the media on Sunday when we were at the Dell Match Play that even though he does have an extension through the June 1st, 2017, that he is actually thinking he will step down probably near the end of the year. His biggest reason After he started giving us reasons why, you know, I want to get involved in certain things. I want to finish them off. I'm the chairmanship of the World Golf Hall of Fame. You know, I have this thing to do, that thing to do. But in the end, what he said, which was, I think, the most telling, is he's Jay Monahan, who was just named the COO, who had been named deputy commissioner a couple of years ago. He said, Jay Monahan is ready. And you know what? That's the thing. If Jay Monahan's ready to go, then he should go. Tim said that when he was named deputy commissioner, maybe the only thing that he was maybe lacking was he didn't have a lot of the relationships in golf and with the players. And then he went on to explain that he's such a people person that was never going to be a problem. It's just one of the things that was not part of what his duties were when he was at the tour. And he said after a couple months of Jay being in that role, he was not only jealous and envious, but was kind of a little pissed off that Jay could be so easily bring people his way, where Tim, I'm sure, did not have exactly that same feeling when he became the deputy commissioner back under Dean Beaman.
Completely different personalities. Jay Monahan, really a people person, and no doubt in our mind from the Grill Room that he's going to do an outstanding job when he takes over the reins. And certainly Tim Fincham has done a phenomenal job at guiding the fortunes of the PGA Tour. Speaking of the PGA Tour, Alex, Shell Houston Open this week, played at the Golf Club of Houston. J.B. Holmes will defend his title. And let me ask you this, Alex. Always a lot of discussion about some players like to play the week before a major. Other players do not like to play the week before a major. There are some valid reasons for playing at Shell, though, concerning the Masters.
Well, I think, you know, what they've tried to do is they've tried to replicate as much as possible green speeds, closely mown areas, giving players the ability to try to mess around with shots that they would normally have at Augusta National. Now, obviously, as we all know, Augusta National and any place else on the planet is not the same. But this is what happened in Atlanta as well, and I thought they did a very good job, and that was what kind of got Phil Mickelson to come to Atlanta on a weekly or an annual basis. And it's really what's gotten Phil Mickelson to come to Shell on an annual basis as well. So I think, you know, what they've done there, the superintendent, Steve Timms, who recognizes, the tournament director, recognizes what he needed to do to have an excellent, excellent field, has done a very, very good job. And he also understands the fact there are some players that are never going to come there because it just doesn't fit into what they're trying to do in their preparation for the Masters. As you know, Tiger Woods was a great example. Tiger Woods never liked to play the week before the Masters. So I don't think there's anything you could have done if you were Steve Timms to get Tiger Woods to show up to be the week before Augusta National.
Well, Jack Nicklaus never played the week before a major either. We got to give credit where credit's due. Reese Jones, tremendous job on that Golf Club of Houston. Some of the players in the field, and it is a good one, as Alex alluded to. Keegan Bradley, Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, as Alex said, Tony Finau, who just won down in Puerto Rico, Ricky Fowler, Sergio, Davis Love, Jimmy Walker, Charles Schwartzel, Jordan Spieth, also among the players that are going to be playing at Shell. And the Shell Houston Golf Association, the oldest golf association in the state of Texas. Burt Darden in the media room, Steve Timms at the helm. They do a heck of a job.
Bobby, as we're talking too, I just want to let you know that the odds out of Vegas just came out for Shell. And Jordan Spieth at 13-2. With Ricky Fowler 12-1, Henrik Stenson and Dustin Johnson are also at 12-1, and Phil Mickelson 15-1, with Louis Oosthuizen and Patrick Reed at 20-1. I'm going to tell you right now, that group right there is a pretty solid group, not only for this week, but as we talked about, for next week as well.
Yeah, you have to lean towards that. But, you know, somebody from the outside certainly could come in and take away this championship. And don't forget, it's a last opportunity, Alex, for somebody to gain a victory and get themselves in the Masters. If they win at Shell and they're not already in, they get that overnight invite and they're down there in a heartbeat.
You know, it's fun. You know, Bob, it's kind of funny because now, these are professional athletes, and to a man, if they're not in Augusta, they're doing anything physically possible to get into Augusta. I mean, Bayo, as soon as he teed it up on Wednesday at Dell, said to me after his first match, he said, you know what? He goes, this is an afterthought, basically. I'm only here to get through the round robin portion and get into round of 16, because if I do that, I'm going to get into the Masters. Now, it turned out that it may not have been the case. He started running the numbers again and wasn't really sure if he'd get in the top 50. Obviously, eventually it happened because of where he finished in the third in the Dell match play. But it's just amazing that adult players, professional players, are so impacted by the ability or the desire to play at Augusta National. When I was talking to Vaughn Taylor, since he played there in 2008, even though he lives in Augusta, Georgia, which I'm sure he'd have no problem getting on that golf course to play, he has not played since he played his last round at Augusta National and hadn't even gone to visit the tournament until last year when he took his son. So, I mean, it's just, it's awe-inspiring. It's just got this, I don't know what it is. It's this huge aura about it that really perplexes me to some extent to see the players basically genuflect in any way, shape, or form to be able to play in the Masters.
Well, let me give you a great example, Alex. Esteban Toledo, four-time winner on the Champions Tour, never made it to the Masters during his PGA Tour career, and says to Sandy Lyle, hey, Sandy, I know you're in the Masters. If you need a caddy, I will be available. Sandy Lyle called him up about a month ago, said, Esteban, you're on the bag. Esteban Toledo was jumping for joy, a professional golfer, four-time winner on the Champions Tour. He's going down to Augusta, but he's only going to be a caddy. How good is that for Esteban Toledo?
I mean, that's the whole point. It's such a different vibe when you get there. And if you've never been there, hopefully we can more accurately predict how good it is to be at Augusta National for a major championship. But that's going to be next week, because this is it for this week. You've been listening to The Grill Room, the most comprehensive look into the world of global golf, powered by GolfWeek.com and heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and TalkSport 2 around the globe. Of course, you can always find the show on our website, thegrillroom.com. As always, we'd love to hear of your feedback. You can send us an email at menu@thegrillroom.com. Next week, we'll be starting our annual Masters contest, and the winner will receive a pair of Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, so be sure to listen in.
So a big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, the Golfin, innovative clubs designed to make beginners into winners, and to GolfWeek.com. So for Janice Self, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bupka, a thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf and like us on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.